89.1 FM, The Lakeshore, listener-supported public radio. This is A Look at the Arts. I'm your host, Tom Lounges. My guest today is the legendary New Orleans musician Lloyd Price, famous for such timeless radio hits as Lottie Miss Claudie, Stag-a-Lee, I'm Gonna Get Married, and Personality among them. And that said, here's the song, Personality, Lloyd Price, coming up on A Look at the Arts.
Over and over, I tried to prove my love to you. Over and over, what more can I do? Over and over, my friend says I'm a fool. But over, over and over, I'll be a fool for you. 'Cause you've got
personality,
walk
with personality,
talk
with personality,
he's certainly got personality, and you'll get to know it on today's show. I'm Tom Lounges. This is A Look at the Arts on Lakeshore Public Radio. My guest is the one and only R&B icon, Lloyd Price. His first book in 2009, The True King of the 50s, The Lloyd Price Story, focused mostly on the musical side of his career. This new book on the market now, called Some Dumb Honky, published by Cool Titles, is the memoir of a young black man raised in the segregated South and being a rising young black performer in America during the era of racism. Mr. Price, welcome to A Look at the Arts.
Thank you so much, Tom. Thank you.
Now, before we jump into discussing the book, I just want to say that I was fortunate enough to have caught you at Star Plaza Theater in 2005 on the Four Kings of Rhythm and Blues tour with Jerry Butler, Gene Chandler, and late Benny King, and what a wonderful show it was.
Wow, that was a terrific show, and I'm happy you got a chance to see it, because Benny is gone, it could never happen again.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you still do any performing, any concerts?
Yes, I do. As a matter of fact, I just came back from over in France. I did tours France and Paris about 2 months ago.
Okay.
And I'm still doing that. I still have a band doing a new album right now. I haven't thought about doing a record in 30 years. But I came up with some real good ideas for new music and, of course, the new book. I'm all full of excitement and energy again, Tom.
What style are you doing with the new album? Is it going to be typical Lloyd Price?
Actually, it's more about world problems. It's leaning toward political, you know, about kids and conditions of the world. But great, great, great music. I would have to say it's kind of like what Sly Stone did in the early years of his music.
Mm-hmm.
Everyday people. It's that kind of material.
All
about
right.
People and things, because I'm too old to talk about love and all that stuff. keeping the beat there, keeping the excitement in the music, and telling a different kind of story to maybe 10 different generations.
So we'll see that come out in this coming year?
Oh, yes. We're also doing Lord and Miss Party, you know, the true story of the youth movement, not just in America, but around the world.
I'm Tom Lounges. This is A Look at the Arts. My guest is the one and only R&B icon, Lloyd Price.
The first song I ever written, Lord of Miss Clark, has been recorded 178 times by the biggest rock stars in the world. The record just keep on going. So Jeff Madoff wrote a great script, and we're going to go up probably on Off-Broadway early March. So it's all exciting, and I want that music, which I wrote during that period, to be a part of the play. So I'm redoing that with new ideas and how things was with the struggle that brought me to Some Dumb Hunky.
Wow, you are really energetic these days.
Yeah, John Boy, you got to keep it moving.
Well, a lot has changed in America since the 1940s, 50s, and 60s, which is when a lot of your book takes place. Of course, the news headlines today clearly prove there's a long way to go when it comes to race relations.
Well, that's right.
When you started writing this book, it was a while back. It was before the current crop of headlines that have people marching in the streets in Ferguson, Boston, and most recently here in Chicago. You're now, if I understand, in your early 80s. What prompted you to share this personal story at this time in your life?
Well, because it's a story that should be told. My children, they don't even know anything about what's in the book, because that's not the world that they lived in. But American history is history. And what brings movement forward is the history of the past. So I experienced these things at a very young age, being the only young teenage star in America at that time, bringing all the youth together. I had to go around to the back door to buy a sandwich and playing in the front of the building. I mean, that's what Some Dumb Hunk is about. And if there ever was two people more closely associated, that would be the black man and the white man in America. And both of them live in denial. We support each other and need each other. Okay. That's what the story is about in Some Dumb Hunky, and it's about denial. And I also found out that to be truth is when I went to Africa, spent some time in Africa, years as a matter of fact, back and forth, not one African ever called me an African or an African American. They always called me the Black American, who I am. But I never lived as a true citizen, as a true American citizen, until I got to be in my 50s and 60 years old, understanding the ground.
You cover a lot of your African experience in the book, starting with the 70s when you first went there with some high ideals that seemed to be trashed the second you stepped off the plane. You go into quite a bit of detail on that. And it's amazing that whole experience happened as it did, because back then we were always told, oh, you know, everything started in Mother Africa. And you found out that it was different.
I did, Tom. I really did. In fact, I found that out when I got off the plane after kissing the ground and going into immigration. When I got to immigration, I found out it was a whole nother story. It was not the dream that I had dreamt about, and it was not the stories I was told about Africa.
Well, from the opening page of the book, the dedication alone, the reader immediately knows that this book is not going to be a warm and fuzzy memoir. The dedication reads, for the listeners, "In memory of all who contributed to the destruction of my innocence." That line alone sets the tone. Strong words.
Well, that's exactly the truth, because I was a little innocent young country boy coming from Kenner, Louisiana, and then growing up into this new world. Didn't have any background of education because my record hit when I was going into the 11th grade. So what people was going to college for, I was already getting. My father was making $75 a week. I was making $300 a night back then.
Wow.
So it was a whole new world for me, Tom. It was a vicious experience, you know, thinking that I had done something that was great by organizing the youth in this country through music. They told me that. I didn't know it. The kids, when they were coming to the dance hall, black, white, purple, whatever color they were, they all liked the music and danced to it. But the elders, they're the ones who did not like it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the experience, is what I'm talking about.
That era you're talking of, you grew up during the era when R&B singles were still called race records, and it was commonplace for white artists like Pat Boone to re-record R&B songs and make them safe, quote-unquote, for the white kids. When did that all change? When did the ropes between the black and white audiences come down? When did you finally start seeing the kids of all colors come together under the music?
In 1953, before Pat Boone, before Patti Page, before they started covering these black records. They didn't start covering black records until 53, 54, when they found out that there was money in it. The young entrepreneurs knew that there was, okay, here's a new market. Because before that, music was for adults. Children did not buy music. We had to listen to what our parents played, both on the white side and the black side. Because an album weighed 5 pounds. You know, like the kids carrying around the iPad and the video and... We had none of that. The cell phones, there was no television. All we had, our outside world was connected to the radio. So when this black music started to click, which Lord of His Party was the first record, did not have race music only printed on it, and was played on all the music stations in 1952, 1953, until they drafted me in the Army at the end of 1953 for integrating the South with my music. I found out who it was. It was the guy in charge of the Selective Service Committee, I think his name was Richard Russell, from Georgia. And when you go to Georgia, every building, every highway got his name on it. But he's the guy who did not want the youth, the black kids and the white kids, to mix or become like the colors from dancing to that music. But each time there was an interference, Tom, that's when Elvis Presley would come out with a record. And Lou Richard, and it just kept coming. Every time they said segregation today, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever, another young kid, black or white, had a hit record. And that drew the kids in closer together.
Won't you come home? Oh, baby, please come home. I'm sick and I'm all alone. Oh, I love and I miss you so. How much you'll never know. This way, when you up and left that day, but things haven't been the same. All I ever hear is your name. Oh, I need you, that's why I'm blue. Come on home, come on home. Oh, I get so tired of being alone. I can't even reach you by telephone. Believe killing me. Won't you come home?
but things haven't been the same. All I ever hear is your name.
That's Lloyd Price on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Tom Lounges, and you're listening to A Look at the Arts. Lloyd has a brand new book out called Some Dumb Honky, and we're talking about his career as a black entertainer in mid-20th century America. We hear so much about DJs like Alan Freed. Was he as instrumental in breaking the color barriers as history remembers him?
Well, the only thing that I would question with Alan Freed is that he got your credit for rock and roll. It was a group called Billy Ward and the Dominoes had a record called 60 Minute Man. And they said, we'll rock you and roll you all night long. I'm your 60 Minute Man. That's where rock and roll came from. Everything else, I would give the credit to Alan Freed.
Okay.
He is the first guy to start bringing black and white kids together to concerts. He did it in Cleveland in a ballpark at 30,000 people.
That was the Moondog Matinee and the Coronation Ball, as I recall.
That is correct. That is correct.
You had mentioned Elvis and a few other people along the way, and when we first started, we were talking about Lottie Miss Claudie, which you hit in 1952. From Elvis to the Beatles to Joe Cocker to Little Richard, as you mentioned, hundreds have covered this song. Is there one or two covers of Lottie Miss Claudie that you favor best?
There's two. I really love the way Paul McCartney did it and Joe Cocker. That would be my two favorites, and the next one would be Little Richard.
In 2009, you published your first book, The True King of the 50s, A Lloyd Price Story, which focused, as I mentioned, on your music and your musical career. When you were writing that book originally, were you already planning Some Dumb Honky, planning to separate the music side from the more personal experience side? Was that the game plan from the get-go?
Actually, what I was doing, Tom, I was learning how to use the computer. So the best way to do that, I said, well, is to try to put down all my memories. So it was two or three books I was doing at the same time.
Okay.
And they're all different. You know, for example, there's a book on me and Don King about the fights we did, the Rumble in the Jungle and the Thrill in Manila, and how he came to be. So I take all these things that I have worked on in my life and just try to separate them and put them in a whole file of my own, because each on itself is a story.
Mm-hmm. So that book about the Muhammad Ali and the Don King fights, that's going to be coming out too?
I'm working on it.
All right. Looking forward to that one. I remember those fights. Boy, they were something else.
It was all an event. It was a creative new idea. It had never happened before. The way we had that fight shown from Africa by closed circuit. And the first digital film was ever done with that particular event. We used Chipmunk and all this camera people who did Woodstock. We took all of them to Africa, and we recorded each foot of that film digital. 485,000 feet of it.
Wow.
So that's a book within itself.
It sounds like it. Sounds like a book and a movie.
Well, it was a movie. When We Were Kings got an Oscar, but I will tell you how all of that happened in the book.
All right. Something in the new book, Some Dumb Honky, that I really love. You tell a story in chapter 15 where you got pulled over in Texas in a case of racial profiling, and you pretended to be foreigners and not speaking English, and you completely fooled them and got out of it. I thought that was a classic story.
Was that amazing? Was that amazing? You know, I had went to one of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad conferences where I heard him say, just be yourself, be yourself. And in order to get more respect, put a turban on your head. You notice the Indians wear stuff on their head?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, when the police pulled us over, we had been watching a guy called Len Hope. You may not remember him. He was a saxophone player, had a couple of hit records, and they wore turbans. So I had turbans, not for the band to wear, but I had them in the car after listening to this sermon about wearing different clothing and talking about dashikis and all that stuff. So we put on turbans. I knew a little Japanese. So when the cop stopped us, I just started pretending I didn't know what he was talking about and put on a turban. And it worked out too. He didn't believe that we were real colored people from America. because when you look at the license plate, I had District of Columbia license plate. This is an actual fact. It's funny asking what was on the license plate. He said District of Columbia. So the guy sitting in the car, he said, well, where is that? And the other one said, well, it must be somewhere from South America.
Wow.
That is an actual fact. It happened in Killeen, Texas.
That underscores the dumb in the title of Some Dumb Honky.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The thing about Some Dumb Honky is that we are all here living on one nation, under one flag. Why is it that you got to have 25 different names for a group of people when we're all here together? This was called the Milton Pot. But when I said there's no two people closer than a black man and a white man, we were here before anybody once the country was taken over. We grew up together in this country.
Mm-hmm.
How could there be over nearly 60 million black people without us all being cousins? We're all related, the black people and the white people in this country. And, oh, I'm talking about the past 400 years. To get America where it is, we have to be related, because you couldn't get that many black people under the bottom of one of these little wooden boats. Something had to happen. So it happened through DNA. And a lot of times, you know, you might be looking at your first cousin. I have cousins down in Louisiana, you know, because I'm a Cajun.
Mm-hmm.
I have cousins in Louisiana with blonde hair, green eyes. If I didn't hear their voice, I would never know that this is one of my relatives. And that's where Some Dumb Honky came from, because a lot of those folks down there would pass for white. Well, it's the same thing with white people. Got a lot of black relations, and they know it. So I'm just saying, why don't we start living together as one? Because unity does matter, and get along. Some Dumb Honky is about denial.
The gene pool is definitely being watered down all across the board with all cultures anymore.
That is correct.
The very title, Some Dumb Honky, some might say is incendiary. Have you had a negative response to it, or do people understand what you're trying to say with it?
We had one negative review, and it came from England, out of maybe 50 or 60 interviews. Yeah.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to A Look at the Arts. I'm Tom Lounges, and this is Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. My guest is the legendary R&B icon, Lloyd Price. Lloyd has a brand new book out called Some Dumb Honky, and we're going to get to talking about that some more in just a minute, but right now, let's refresh our memory of his music with a classic track going back to the 1950s, titled I'm Gonna Get Married. I'm Gonna Get Married. That's Lloyd Price on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Tom Lounges, and you're listening to A Look at the Arts. Lloyd has a brand new book out called Some Dumb Honky, and we're talking about his career as a black entertainer in mid-20th century America. Jumping back into the music scene of the 50s and 60s and the racial issues, to educate my listeners on a well-known incident of racism that ruined a wonderful career, July 1957, I'm sure you will remember, Frankie Lyman, in the midst of excitement of singing, jumped off the stage and danced with a white girl, and it ruined his career and wound up getting the TV show kicked off the air. That's just kind of crazy if you look back with today's eyes on what happened.
Can you imagine, Tom? I mean, that was big time, but that was just a piece of it, how the elders and the Dixiecrats, who was in power at that time, did not want anything like that visual, personal, no contact, none whatsoever, at all. And Alan Freed did lose his show because of it.
Frankie was only 15 years old. He jumped off stage and danced with her right there in front of the camera. Nothing covert about it.
But Tom, Emmett Till was 14. You know what I'm saying? It didn't matter. Age did not matter. And black people did not matter. You was not looked at as a person. You know, you had no right to get down and dance with this woman. A dog had more right than a black man. A dog can go in the front door, he'll be patted on the head and probably kissed. If a black man went in the door, he will get a stick over his head. And that's how they saw it. My father died not ever understanding manhood, and he had 11 children.
That incident with Frankie Lyman had to be in the back of every black performer's mind during that era. I can imagine that all of you were worried that even a moment of innocently getting caught up in the music could ruin your career or worse.
Well, Tom, let me bring you up to 1959 and 60.
Okay.
When the crash had 16 candles.
16 candles. Make a lovely light.
Mm-hmm. You know, it was three black kids and one white, Johnny Maestro. We was on the tour with Dick Clark Caravan. In Columbia, South Carolina, when he went out on the stage, all the lights came up, and he could not sing 16 candles on the stage with those other three black guys of the crest in 1960.
Wow. Just being on stage.
Could not, and it was the same thing throughout the South. In Birmingham, Alabama, and Montgomery, they had two sides of the stage you had to work. The band was in the middle, then you walk over on the black side and sing a little bit, and then you walk back over on the white side and sing. I mean, what kind of penetration could you have or confidence in your ability to perform under such strain?
One of the things I remember speaking with a local guy here, which I'm sure you know, James Pookie Hudson of the Spaniels, shared stories with me over the years about how many black songwriters and recording artists were cheated out of publishing rights and royalties, especially in the 50s and 60s, because they were fooled, they were tricked. A lot of them didn't have the education that the record label owners had. You seem to have a little bit of that with Specialty Records, if I'm reading correctly. Is that true?
Yes. I have a chapter in the book about that, exactly what Pookie talked about. Pookie was a dear friend of mine as well. He recorded for my Double L label right after he left VJ.
Okay.
But it was very difficult. If someone possessed 125% of knowledge of something, and the person you're talking to possessed 75%, who you think going to win?
Right.
The guy who possesses the most knowledge of it. How he got them was a Cadillac and maybe a couple hundred dollars, take them into a white restaurant, you know, even though they sat in the back, but it was inside a white restaurant. The trouble with black people during that period, they wanted to be involved, you know, they just had to be included. If they was not included, they felt, you know, I'm a star, man. How come I got to go out to the back? So if somebody invited them to the front, that was a big deal. But me understanding who I was, always understanding from the beginning, I was a second-class citizen. I tried to learn every day about what was happening in my life, because now I'm living in a whole different world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm now talking to white people. That had never happened before. I'm sitting at the table with white people. Even though I know my place, I understand it. I'm trying to learn. I'm trying to learn academically. I'm trying to learn professionally. and I'm trying to learn economically every time I sit down, my entire life. And that drew me to get my first record company and publishing company when I was 21 years old in 1956.
Could you have imagined at that time that we would one day have a black U.S. president within your lifetime and that we would see the civil rights movement equalize things in so many ways?
We didn't even have a black policeman. They were beginning to try and hire black policemen, but they couldn't carry guns and they couldn't arrest white people. And now today, Barack Obama is in the White House. And I think I know how it happened. The grandparents of the young adults today are the reason. Because the grandparents are the ones who bought that race music. They're the ones who took the first clubs on the head. Their children, the children of those children who were marched in Washington with Martin Luther King in 1963, that had 10 years of getting ahead of us on every campus, every bus ride. The young kids of the mid-50s and the 60s, their children, it's the same DNA from that time that got Barack in the White House. I know that to be true because I'm a living witness of it. I watched it. Barack is 50, I'm 80. I know exactly what happened.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to A Look at the Arts. I'm Tom Lounges, and this is Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. My guest is the legendary R&B icon, Lloyd Price. But right now, let's refresh our memory of his music with a classic track going back to the 1950s. This one's called Lady Luck. That's a little number called Lady Luck from Lloyd Price. My guest today on A Look at the Arts. I'm Tom Lounges, and we're talking with Lloyd about his new book, Some Dumb Honky, which traces the evolution of his career as a black entertainer in mid-20th century America. You came of age and you grew and found success at a time when it was very, very difficult. Along with having all these great hits, Lloyd, you had your own record label, as you said, at age 21. You owned a nightclub in New York in the 70s. You developed your own food line, snack foods, Lloyd Price Foods. Now you're a published author. In short, you have done very, very well for yourself, despite growing up when you did and the racist times you journeyed through. What was it that kept you focused? What drove you to attain these great accomplishments?
Well, only in America, a man like me could come from the dirt to be whatever you wanted to be. There's no other country in the world as great as this country, in spite of all the problems that we may look at. But the problems that we have in America was minute. The only problem we ever had here was black and white. where it got in the early 40s, where women were becoming more of the economy and more of the society and getting more respect. That opened the door for everybody, because women was just as much in prison as black people. So when the gate opened for everybody, America became great. America became where if you have any sort of ability, no matter where you're from, and you know how to do it, you got a chance here. That's not true in most of the world. So I'm thankful for being an American, and I'm thankful for being a citizen, and proud to be veteran of the United States military arm, because that's how all of these things gave me credentials that if I stay on case and stay focused in this country, anybody got a chance to be or do whatever they think they can do or whatever their ability allow them to do.
It seems like it would have been so hard to stay on task and to keep that focus going through the ordeals that were going on in the 50s and in the 60s until the marches started and people started to see the light, so to speak, because there was no laws protecting you, especially in certain areas of the country.
Actually, there wasn't, but there's no limit on your talent. When the young entrepreneurs began to find out that black music rang registers, you have to understand that what breaks down the segregated barrel is money. If you can hear the register ringing, everybody becomes one color.
I see. The color green.
The color. That's right.
Well,
that is correct.
As you mentioned, we always learn from those that came before. We learn from our past history. And that said, what is the best career advice that you could pass on to a young artist today?
Well, the only thing you got to do is say, like a little nitwit like me, stay focused. You got to believe in yourself, and you got to have confidence that you can do it. It's not as easy now, because people are not looking for artists. Artists are looking for the big companies. All these companies have grown record. They all got record dollars. When I was in the middle of my career, there was 8,000 record labels. Now there are three majors that have taken all of the little ones that had anything to do. It's very difficult, but if you have talent, talent is born every day, and that what you got to have in music is a song. If you're a songwriter or a musician, you have to stay on your case and create your mind. You're not going to go very far today by copying somebody else, because it sounds like everything is playing on the radio is a carbon copy of an iPad.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can step out of that, I think there's always going to be people who want entertainment. And if that's your field and if that's what you want to do, stay focused.
You have, to your credit, 15 top 10 R&B singles. Are there any that you're especially proud of and ones that you still get a thrill, even all these years later, hearing on the radio?
Well, a lot of it's quality, of course, because Fats Domino is on piano, Dave Bartholomew is on trumpet, and Earl Palmer is on drums. Some of the most recorded people in the world. These guys created the big beat in New Orleans. And, of course, listening to Neil Diamond do Stagger Lee, it's a real thrill.
Go Stagger Lee, go Stagger Lee, go Stagger Lee, go Stagger Lee.
Elvis recorded Lord of His Party 21 times. I mean, I'm humbled by these great men seeing fit to do that song. I'm still thrilled every time I hear it.
We're all at a certain point at this time, I believe, where we sit down and reevaluate our lives and our legacy. Obviously, you are putting down a lot of that on paper in your series of books. At this point, looking back, are there any career regrets, anything you said, you know, I really wish I had done this or not done that? Is there any one thing that really stands out that you would have changed?
Well, no, tell me, you know what? I said no, because you cannot rush the experience. I had no academic background. I had to learn everything from foot up. Of course, I would have loved to save some of the mistakes I made, but if I hadn't made mistakes, they would not have been an experience. I would have not experienced it. So, no, I don't regret anything.
Okay. In Chapter 13, Step by Step, you reflect on how you opened the door for Little Richard Penniman by taking Art Roop of Specialty Records, a demo tape. And, of course, you mentioned you were in the service, and they kind of groomed Little Richard to step into your spot. I know you and Richard have become friends over the years, but looking back, do you kind of regret lining Art Roop's pockets further by introducing him to such a great talent?
Well, the one thing I regret about Art Roop, when I asked him, after I had introduced him to Little Richard, and Richard had set the world on fire, I asked Art Roop for a release to give me back my contract when I wanted to start my record company. He told me no, because he had made me a commodity, and he would sell it back to me. So I bought it back for $1,000.
Wow.
In 1956. So you know how big $1,000 was in 56. You could buy a new Ford for $1,200.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That would be one of the things that I really, I guess would be what I would call a disappointment to me with our group, because I took his record company from a gospel label to being the number one record company in the world in terms of selling that music. But it didn't bother me, because what it did, it made me smarter. When I opened my own record company, I changed my whole approach to how to do music and wrote Just Because. And John Lennon saw fit to sing that song. Fleetwood Mac saw fit to sing Just Because. Dick Clark was the first ballad he ever played on his TV show, on Bandstand. So, no, that would be a regret or a disappointment, but I ain't mad at nobody.
Just because you left and said goodbye, you think that I will sit and cry? Even if my heart should tell me so, darling, I would rather let you go. Just because you think that you're so smart, going around and breaking lovers' hearts. But maybe I am asking for too much. Darling, please don't ever break my heart.
Tom Lounges, this is A Look at the Arts on Lakeshore Public Radio. My guest is the one and only R&B icon, Lloyd Price.
Is there anything we haven't talked about, Mr. Price, that you'd like to?
I don't think so, Tom. We're going up with the play in New York, The Lloyd Price Story, probably the end of March, and I would love to invite you to come and see the beginning of the youth movement of what we now call rock and roll, and one reason why Barack Obama is in the White House and why Rosa Parks sat in the front seat of the bus. It all had to have a beginning, and Laudamus Clardy will tell how it all came together.
All right, we look forward to that. And you're talking about the end of this March 2016, correct?
That's exactly correct.
All right, and we have a new album to look forward to coming this year, and the wonderful book about Don King and the Thriller in Manila and all that good stuff.
Absolutely. Well, that book Don King and I'll probably do together. Don's still here. He's my very good friend, and we did a lot of these things together, so we'll probably cooperate on that.
Well, you've got a very busy year ahead of you, my friend.
No question.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to guest today on A Look at the Arts. Is there a website or a place online where we can keep up with everything, Lloyd Price?
LloydPriceMusic.com.
LloydPriceMusic.com. That's where we'll follow you.
And Tom, Sometime Hockey is on Amazon.com.
And you can probably get it on your website as well, correct?
That is correct.
All right. Thank you so much, sir, for giving us time today.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
What a pleasure. The great Lloyd Price here on A Look at the Arts. Personally, one of my favorites out of his catalog. Where were you on our wedding day? Tom Lounges. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to tune in this Tuesday, 7 p.m., for Midwest Beat as my Black History Month series continues. The topic of Tuesday's show, jazz, and live in studio will be Mr. Jazz himself, Billy Foster. Be sure to join us 7 p.m. Tuesday. Until then, keep warm and keep the music playing, and thank you for listening to Public Radio.
The night was clear and the moon was yellow, and the leaves came tumbling down. I was standing on the corner when I heard my bulldog bark. He was barking at the two men who were gambling in the dark. It was Stagg Lee and Billy, two men who gamble late. Stagg Lee threw seven, Billy swore that he threw eight.
great Lloyd Price here on A Look at the Arts.
As bright as yours, I've never found love that can grow. And that is why I love you. So come on. You better come on. You better come on into my heart. Good and pure as yours. I've never seen a smile as true and bright as yours. I've never found love that can grow. And that is why I love you. So come on. You better come on. My heart. Just sitting here thinking, with you on my mind, don't go nowhere. I'm worried all the time. Come on.